Good morning. The Senate Tax Committee will come to order. This morning we have the Senate's Omnibus Jobs and Tax Relief Bill. And so many of you in this room and others that aren't here this morning have worked so very hard at all of the elements of this bill. And I've done my best to assemble what I think are the things that we can accomplish, the things we should accomplish, and the things that are our highest priorities. And for me, those decisions were based on a few key elements. First, when we met for the first time last year, we faced a balance of a $5.2 billion deficit and what I believe to be a mandate to resolve that deficit without raising taxes. And I believe that the fiscal discipline of the members of the legislature and by agreement of the governor have successfully charted a course of fiscal discipline that is paying off, and we see that now in a surplus of $1.2 billion, and we're hopeful that that growth in the economy will continue. Second, I think the highest priority for this committee and for most of us here at the Capitol is competitiveness. We want Minnesota's tax climate to be competitive so we can compete in a larger national and even global economy. Third is the concern that many of us have with the complexity of our tax code in Minnesota. Simplification is very important and in a high priority. We talked a lot last year about federal conformity and how complex it is for Minnesotans to file their tax returns when we do not conform. We've also talked a lot about encouraging economic activity, which I think is among our very highest goals here this year, and that, in my view, takes three forms in this bill. One is to encourage job growth. The second is to encourage entrepreneurship, and the third, capital investment. Finally, I think for purposes of this bill, making long-term and sustainable improvements in the tax code and adding certainty are also at a premium. So with those principles in mind and many others that were discussed here in this committee and a philosophical viewpoints, which are respected always here, there is a bill that's been prepared. We will pass out a spreadsheet in a minute, but I'm going to give a couple of examples of how we have tried to assemble a bill that fits some of the goals that we've just talked about. The first example is the state general levy. We've talked about it here. Businesses across the state of Minnesota pay approximately 30% of their property taxes to the state of Minnesota as a result of law changes that were made in 2001, the big plan, according to Governor Ventura. Unfortunately, the businesses in the state of Minnesota, I think, got the raw end of the stick there, the short end, because the reform was intended to draw down school district property taxes and ask the businesses to pay more into the general levy to offset those costs. And in fact, the school districts have gone back and levied back all those reductions, and so now the businesses pay both the school district taxes and also the state general levy. That's not sustainable. It's increased every year with an automatic inflator, and it's gone from $591 million across the state to $801 million. With that inflator, it's becoming a huge burden for Minnesota businesses, small and large, whether they're in rural Minnesota or in downtown Minneapolis. It's becoming a great burden. And when you look at the Tax Foundation study that says Minnesota is the worst business tax climate in the United States, this is an urgent issue for all of us. It should be an urgent issue. If we eliminated the state business tax, the state general levy, for a $1 million commercial urban property in Minnesota, the tax burden would go from 10th to 19th in the nation. And for that same $1 million property in a rural community, we would go from 13th to 24th. This should be a priority for us. We also have in this bill a change to the property tax refund to a 75% refund for the targeted refund where a homestead property has increased more than $100 and 12%. We've had this in law for a while. The House has a different approach, but our recommendation is a 75% refund on a permanent basis. So if homeowners' property taxes spike, there's an answer from the state of Minnesota. Another example would be our emphasis on the capital upfront exemption. The sales tax that's paid on capital equipment investments is harmful to our business economy, and it's counterproductive to investments in new equipment, innovation, and growth. And we know that when businesses buy equipment, it's because they expect a good return on investment, and we at the state of Minnesota need to encourage those businesses to make those decisions. They also end up in higher productivity, more economic activity in the state of Minnesota, and that is to be, a high priority for us. Another example is the military pay subtraction phase-in for 2014 and 15. It's the right thing to do, but also it's an important tool for economic development when we can recruit high-skilled leaders back into Minnesota with their families. They will start a second career here. They have skills that we need here, high degrees of technological and scientific ability, but also entrepreneurship and leadership. Right now, Minnesota ranks among the 10 least friendly states for military retirees. Of the 42 jurisdictions in the United States that have income taxes, 13 don't levy any income tax on military pensions, and 20 provide some type of exclusion. And for those reasons, we've included that in this bill, but it would not begin until 2014-15. We talked a little bit about complexity and conformity. I think that there is bipartisan support. In fact, Senator Rust introduced a bill that's included in our bill. It would eliminate the marriage penalty paid by Minnesotans for 2012. Unfortunately, we couldn't get this done in 2011. It was a two-year proposal on the part of the President and Congress to make this provision for the elimination of the marriage penalty, and we want to take advantage of it for 2012. And it will affect 560,500 taxpayers in the state of Minnesota and will provide relief to all of them. Right now, they have to add back $1,950 in income into their state taxes Minnesota does not conform. Senator Squid.
If you're going to go through the bill, could we have a copy of it?
It's coming. I'm almost done, Senator Squid. I appreciate your patience. We have TIF provisions in this bill to encourage economic growth across the state. We have tax credits that we believe are working and have a long-term sustainable plan with them, the Angel Investment Tax Credit, the Historic Tax Credit, the Brewery Tax Credit, and Medical Devices Tax Exemption. We have frozen LGA at 2010 levels to make sure that we have 4 years in a row of certainty for our local partners. We added truth in budgeting for the residents. For the costs associated with making these changes, we have drawn against state government savings and reductions in data analytics, reforms, and efficiencies, and make total tax reductions of $102.5 million for Minnesotans. And with that, Senator Skoy and others, I'd be happy to pass out the bill and provide a spreadsheet, and we'll get into more detail.
Thank you. $100 million.
A couple ways we can do it.
Ms. McQuay, if you would like to review the spreadsheet, and then when we're done with that, members have questions, please jump right in. And then after that, we'll have a summary by council. Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, I would also note that the spreadsheet is being posted online under our office's webpage, and if for anyone who follows our office's Twitter account, that will be tweeted. The link will be tweeted as well. And that's at MN_SCRFA.
That's good.
Madam Chair and members, I'll start with the individual and corporate income tax and the marriage penalty conformity for 2012 only. Your provision, your bill had the refund going out in 2012, and what was included in the omnibus bill is just the conformity for 2012, and for the biennium, that's $62.4 million. Senator Daley had a bill to conform for the IRA rollover for airline bankruptcy pensions, and that's $1.4 in the first biennium. Senator Ortman, you carried a provision for the military pension subtraction. This provision was modified slightly to begin in calendar year 13 with a 55% subtraction. So there's no cost in the first biennium. Along with that, because it targets the same population of people, the military pension credit for past service was repealed, and that also begins in the same year that this starts. Senator Peterson had a bill to repeal the contractor withholding requirement, and that comes at a compliance cost of $105,000 in the first biennium. Both you and Senator Sundrum looked at the historic tax credit, and the language includes some non-budget provisions that were included in your bill, Madam Chair, but the Senator Sundrum bill is included on this spreadsheet. The sunset extends beyond 2016, and so there is no cost in the first biennium. The committee heard the angel tax credit in Senator Michelle's bill. His original proposal was to increase it by $8 million, and the proposal in the omnibus increases it by $5 million in the first biennium and each year thereafter. Senator Dames presented a proposal to the committee to increase the amount of barrels allowable for the brewer tax credit, and that is a cost in the first biennium of $390,000. The statewide levy reduction and phase out is a cost of $31,000 in the first year, and this phase out. This is frozen for fiscal years 13 to 16, and then phases out over the next 9 years. That comes with a slight income tax interaction in the out years. Senator Koch and several other senators carried a capital upfront exemption. Hers was unique in that it offered it to small businesses, and the way this proposal is incorporated in the omnibus bill is to first allow it for small businesses and then phase it in. So in the first calendar year in 2013, it's allowed for businesses with 20 or less employees, and same with the second year, and then in calendar year 14, it is allowed for businesses with 50 employees or less, and then is opened up to everyone after that. The medical device exemption was a Senator Howe and Limmer provision, and that begins with a fiscal year 2013 effective date with $3.9 million in the first biennium. Senator Howe carried the repeal of the early remittance for the sales tax, and because the budget reserve is fully filled up, that there is no cost right now to the first biennium, since it's an obsolete provision now that the budget reserve is fully filled up. The motor vehicle paint and supplies tax was a Senator Chamberlain proposal at $2.5 million in the first biennium. Senator the committee heard the Senator Rosen bill last year, Senate Bill 493, and that is for the inclusion of the little cigars and the cigarette tax, and that cigarette excise tax is $2.4 million in the first biennium, with a reduction in the tobacco products at $1.7 million. The sales tax on cigarettes is increased by 1.4, and then the reduction on the sales tax on little cigars comes with a $700,000 cost. Then there's a cigarette non-settlement fee of $1.3 million. And also included in that provision is an appropriation to the commissioner for a report due in 2013. The subtotal on the sales and use tax is a reduction of $2.3 million. And I guess I would note, too, there that the Senator Chamberlain increases and the Senator Rosen increases approximately offset the reduction in the general fund cost for the medical device exemption. Continuing on the second page, there was a provision, Senate File 1831, that the chair carried to clean up some of the market value language throughout the statute, and that has a cost in the tails of $800,000. Madam Chair, the targeted property tax refund increases to 75%, costing the general fund $1.98 million in the first biennium. The LGA freeze will first take effect in the tails in calendar year 13, but will be paid out in the tails. And that total cost, including interactions, is $1.14 million. There were some education provisions that have been passed to the tax committee that you'll first see as we walk through the language. But because those provisions increase levies and the shift, the property tax recognition shift, then buys down the general fund a little, so there's a bump to the general fund of $339,000. And then, Madam Chair, there's several tax increment financing districts that are listed on the spreadsheet because, in general, there's a fiscal cost to somebody, but there's no fiscal, no revenue cost to the state, and all those are at zero. And we'll walk through those in further detail as we walk through the language. And then, Madam Chair, there's a one-time transfer to the general fund from the Department of Revenue Special Service and Recovery Fund for Local Sales Tax Administration, and that's $4.3 million. This is a fund within the Department of Revenue, and there's this doesn't stop the transfers into that fund. It just takes the fund, some of the fund balance out of it and applies it to the general fund. There's a one-time transfer then from the general fund to the budget reserve of $99.9 million, and as we walk through the language, there's some possibilities that allow for that to be reduced, but the number that we have to carry on the spreadsheet is $99.9 million. So then the total net general fund changes, you can see on line 75, is $34,000 increase to the general fund. Madam Chair and members, if need be, I can walk through the general fund revenues. The non-general fund revenues, but they're mostly the legacy funds that
189 million.
that trigger off of the sales tax provisions. I would also note that the Senator Decry provision that the committee heard was modified to stay within the transportation funds, and so there's no bump then to the general fund. It just stays within the transportation accounts. And that was, I believe, the amendment that was accepted by the Transportation Committee. And that bill has been sent back to the Tax Committee. And then I would also note the Senator Senjum proposal, Senate File 687, is the bill exempting payments for laboratory services for those taken outside the state. And those that bill was also modified to be pushed back into the tails. And so the cost in the tails is $6.5 million. The levy changes you can see there on the lines 91 through 94, but I think it would be most helpful to walk through those as we walk through the language.
All right. Thank you, Ms. McQuay. Any questions for Ms. McQuay about this spreadsheet? You can always come back to it as necessary.
Madam Chair, just one.
Senator Michelle.
Ms. McQuay, on the statewide property tax phase-out, can you give us the numbers again on how many years are we talking about to phase that out, given the language in this bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Michelle, the levels are frozen at approximately 2010 levels for fiscal years 13 through 16, and then over the next 9 years it's phasing out. So in tax year 2027, there'll be a for both commercial, industrial, and
thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. Mr. Sylvia and Ms. Pollack, do you want to go through the bill summary?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'll be going through Articles 1 and 2, the income and sales tax articles of the Delete All Amendment. Sections 1 through 4 of the bill are Senator Michelle's Senate File 1774, the changes to the Angel Investment Program. Section 1 removes language concerning mandatory conversion to removing debt as with mandatory conversion to equity as a type of qualifying investment under the credit. And it also eliminates the definition of intern, which is also addressed in Section 2, which Section 2 eliminates the compensation and minimum wage requirements for businesses that receive investments under the credit. And it also contains language to prohibit a company securities traded on a public stock exchange or to sell the business within 180 days of the date that the qualifying investment is made. Section 3 increases the cap on the credit allocations from 12 to 17 million. This is applicable for taxable years 2012 to 2014. Section 4 contains some language about public information for the mailing address, phone number, et cetera, type of industry for a qualified small business for purposes of the credit. Sections 5 in Article 1, also Sections 7, 10, 17, and 18, pertain to Senate File 2427. This was Senator Daley's bill to provide conformity to federal law for the IRA rollover payments for airline employees.
Ms. Pollack, did you say 7, 10, 17, and 18? Did I get those right?
Madam Chair, yes. Section 5. 5, 7, 10, 17, and 18.
Thank you.
Section 6 strikes language referencing the contractor withholding requirement. This was Senator Peterson's bill, Senate File 780. And this language is also contained in the repealer in Section 20. Section 8 Adds language to provide the federal conformity for the increased standard deduction pertaining to the marriage credit. Madam Chair, this was your bill, Senate File 2002, and it applies for tax year 2012 only. Senator Rest also had a provision, Senate File 1988, to address this. Section 9, Madam Chair, also contains language from your Senate File 2006, and it allows an income tax subtraction of 55% of military retirement pay beginning in tax year 2013. Section 11 strikes the definition of a qualified individual, and this is for purposes of the repeal of the military retirement pay credit. And the repealer is also contained in, contained in Section 20. Sections 12 to 14 contain language for the bill that we heard yesterday, Madam Chair, your Senate File 2449. And this is making some changes to the Historic Structure Preservation Credit, mainly just some language changes, and allowing credits granted to corporate entities to be passed through to partners according to any executed agreement between those relevant parties. Section 15 is...
I'm sorry, Ms. Pollack, on that. The assignability three times was not included in this version of the bill. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, and also that effective date with the fiscal note was not included.
Correct, Madam Chair. And the retroactivity dates from your bill that we heard yesterday are also not included. These sections are effective the day following final enactment.
Thank you.
Section 15 is Senator Senjum's bill, Senate File 1881, extending the sunset date for the State Historic Preservation Office credit. Section 16 provides a subtraction from alternative minimum taxable income for the military retirement pay deduction. And Section 19 modifies the definition of qualified brewer for the small brewer credit, increasing the threshold from 100,000 to 250,000 as the minimum number of barrels. Section 20 contains two provisions of a repealer, which I mentioned earlier in the summary. Moving on to Article 2, the sales tax article. Section 1 repeals the vendor remittance requirement. And language pertaining to this repealer is also contained in Section 18. And this was Senator Howe's provision, Senate File 1012. Section 2 adds language to exclude payments by an entity for laboratory services that are collected outside the state. This was Senator Senjum's bill, Senate File 687, which was heard in Health and Human Services yesterday and passed to this committee. Section 3 adds the definition of payments on rent-to-own or lease-to-own used vehicles to the definition of retail sale. This is Senator DeCroix's bill, Senate File 1636. Also in Section 13 of this article, we allow sales tax revenue from those payments to go to the transportation funds.
Ms. Pollack, was that bill sent back to the tax committee also?
Madam Chair, yes. It was sent to the tax committee from transportation yesterday, I believe.
Thank you.
You know you look like me today.
Exactly, yeah.
Section 4 is Senator Chamberlain, Senate File 367, adding a definition of motor vehicle repair paint and motor vehicle repair supplies to the definition of retail sale. And it contains some requirements about how those items must be invoiced. Section 5 also pertains to those definitions of motor vehicle repair paint and supplies. Sections 6 and 7 are the medical device sales tax exemption. These were Senator Limmer's Senate File 1884 and Senator Howe's 677. And this adds a sales tax exemption for medical devices purchased in transactions covered under Medicare and Medicaid. It contains language clarifying single patient use items and the definition of durable medical equipment. Section 8 is the upfront capital equipment purchase phase-in provision. For calendar year 2013, the upfront exemption begins for employers employing 20 or fewer employees. And then in calendar year 15, the threshold is raised to employers having 50 or fewer employees. And then beginning in calendar year 2016, the exemption becomes available upfront to all purchasers. This was based on Senator Koch's provision, Senate File 1670, and several others that we heard in this committee. Sections 9 through 12, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Section 9 adds a sales tax exemption for the motor vehicle repair, paint, and supplies. When those supplies are purchased by a repair or body shop and used in the repair or painting process, or become part of the vehicle during the repair process. Sections 10 to 12 also pertain to the capital equipment exemption phase-in, and they remove references to the refund process for the capital equipment purchases. And these sections are effective when the exemption becomes upfront for all purchasers in 2016. Section 13, again, provides that for the sales tax revenue on the rent-to-own and lease-to-own used vehicle purchases to go to the transportation funds. Sections 14 to 17 are language from Senator Rosen's bill, Senate File 493, modifying the definition of cigarette to include the little cigars. And I would note that in Section 17, we have a $100,000 appropriation to the commissioner to cover the cost of the study that is required under that section to include recommendations on using a unified method of collecting cigarette sales tax revenue and other compliance issues. And then finally, Madam Chair, Section 18 is a repealer, and it just repeals some of the provisions that apply to the early vendor remittance requirements that were repealed in Section 1 of the RFP.
Ms. Pollack, thank you.
Chair.
Mr. Sylvia.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I will be going over Articles 3, 4, and 5. Article 3 is property tax, and Section 1 relates to Senator Daley's bill relating to the expenditure type reporting. What Section 1 does is tie the expenditure type reporting in with the monetary benefit provided for the performance standard measures program, and what this requires that in 2012 only, not only would members have to participate in the standard performance measures program, but also participate in Senator Daley's bill, which requires expenditure type reporting by expenditure type, which we'll go into in a later section.
Madam Chair and members, the Section 2 is an education provision that was passed to the Tax Committee. This was the Senator Stump provision, Senate File 2041, that was passed by the Education Committee. Currently in law, there's a formula for allowing school districts to levy for their career and technical program, and that program, that levy is capped. And so what this language does is remove that cap on that language.
Ms. McQuay, excuse me just 1 second, for members and others. Those the education bills that are referenced here were passed to the Tax Committee yesterday, so we do have them within the jurisdiction of the committee, and we can hear them or amend them and consider them here. So thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Section 3 combines two proposals. It was a Senate File 315, a Senator Olson bill, and Senate File 1760, a Senator Nino bill, allowing districts, member districts of one, the TIES, the Technology Information Education, I might be wrong on that, but it's a technology building that several districts participate in, and what those districts do is levy to pay for the costs of that one building. The Senator Nino provision adds new language to allow six member districts that are members of SCRED, the St. Croix River Education District, to all agree to levy their individual taxpayers to pay for the cost of one combined building.
Madam Chair and members, Section 4 deals with the state general tax, and this removes the inflation index and sets the state general levy base amount at roughly the 2010 levels for 2013 through 2016, beginning with taxes payable in 2017. Both levies are then reduced by 10% each year until the tax is eliminated in taxes payable 2026. Section 5 removes the apportionment, percentage apportionment of the state general levy, since both amounts are specifically stated in Section 4. Section 6 is related to Senator Daley's bill, and what this requires is that all cities with a population of 2,500 or more and counties provide the county auditor the municipal website where the public is able to access budget information, and also requires that the published notice for the upcoming budget hearing also include a statement that budget information is available online. Section 7 is also from Senator Daley's bill, and that requires that the truth in taxation notice clearly state for each county and each city with a population of 2,500 or more that budgetary information is available on the municipality's website. Section 8 is from Senator Ortman's bill, and what this does is modify the formula for the targeting property tax refund. Currently, the refund is 60% of the increase of the greater of 12% and 100. And what this section does is increase that factor from 60% to 75%.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. I have a question on that. So the practical impact of that is it raises the value amount per home that's going to be eligible for the credit, or raises the income?
What the targeting refund, Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, what the targeting refund is not based on income. It's based on increase in property tax from 1 year to the next. If the property tax has increased 12% over the previous year's amount and $100, then this formula indicates that the homeowner would be eligible for 75% of that amount over 12%.
Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair, so the value of the home is being increased that is eligible for the 12%. I'm not tracking.
Senator Scoy, no, it's the tax is payable. The property tax liability, if there's an increase of $100 and 12% in 1 year, then the targeted property tax
has to meet both conditions.
Senator Rust. If it's both, then folks can apply for the refund of 75% of the increase.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Section 9 is also dealing with Senator Daley's bill, and what this requires is that a municipality publish on its website 3 years of previous and 1 year of current budgetary data on both revenue and expenditures. This section also provides that the information must be published on its website within 14 days after final adoption. Subdivision 4 provides alternative measures for municipalities that do not have a website, including publication in newspapers. Subdivision 5 provides an incentive, which is tied back to Section 1 of this article, for incentive in 2012 only. This measure, this performance of Senator Daley's bill here would be required in 2013 and thereafter, but it would be voluntary in 2012. And Subdivision 6 clarifies that failing to comply with this expenditure type reporting in years 2013 thereafter will result in withholding of state aid listed in Subdivision 6. Section 10 is from Senator Ortman's bill, and what that does is freeze cities' 2013 local government aid distribution at an amount equal to their 2012 distribution, which can be tied back to their 2010 distribution. Section 11 is also from Senator Ortman's bill.
Madam Chair,
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I got a question on Section 10, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to ask it, but or could I ask to see what it would cost if we were to freeze the formula, allow the formula go forward for cities that are under population of 5,000, to see what that cost would be?
Well, Senator Howe, I encourage you to talk to our fiscal staff when we're done here, but okay. That was discussed when we talked about the freeze, and I think just follow up, they've got the information for you.
Thank you.
Section 11 is also from Senator Ortman's bill, and that's related to the freeze of the LGA and that updates the appropriation of the local government aid to reflect this freeze.
Madam Chair and members, Section 12 is part of the stump bill on the career and technical levy limitation. Because levies were already certified, we're maintaining the cap on the career and technical for the year that it was certified. Section 13 is...
Senator Rest. Excuse me, Ms. McQuay. Senator Rest.
Thank you. That was just a technical section. But why is this Senator Stump's bill being carried here rather than in the K-12 bill?
Well, Senator Rest, it's not unprecedented, is my understanding.
I just want to make...
And so this bill is moving, and it was easier to include this in a bigger package. So Senator Olson asked us to carry these specific provisions.
So the K-12 committee chair is aware that this provision is being carried in the tax bill.
Yes, we are doing it to accommodate her and her committee, and the underlying bills that are included in this omnibus proposal are here in the tax committee. They were sent here yesterday.
Okay.
Ms. McQuay.
Section 13 has to do with the lease levy. In current law, there is a lease levy for instructional space, but we don't allow it for administrative space. And what certain districts have done, Madam Chair, your district, Waconia, is one of those that has come to the legislature and said we can lease space cheaper for administrative space. And I think in your situation, it was they'd rather move the administration for temporary purposes than students. And so in certain cases, the Education Committee has said, go ahead and lease space for administrative space instead of instructional. And that's done here under Senator Perry's bill. It was Senate File 1139 for Faribault and Senator Bonoff's bill 2373 for Wayzata. And all those levy provisions combined will potentially raise levies by 20.532 million in the next biennium. And because of the property tax recognition shift, there's an increase to the general fund of $339,000 in the current biennium.
Madam Chair and members, Section 14 directs the Commissioner of Revenue to recalculate the targeting property refund that we discussed back in Section 8 at the new increase from 60 to 70%. That requires that the recalculation be done. Section 15 is a repealer, and that repeals the state general levy for taxes payable in 2026 and thereafter. Article 4 is the local development. And Sections 1 and 2 and a few sections that are upcoming deal with Senator Limmer's and Senator Gerlach's bill, which essentially we recreated a mining reclamation area and a soil deficiency area to allow these types of districts to be created statewide. And what Section 1 and Section 2 does is simply modify the definitions of authority and project to include this newly created mining reclamation project area, which we can go in a little bit more depth in a later section. Section 3 is from Senator Howe's bill, and what this does is modify the definition of a redevelopment district by requiring that 50% or more of the buildings be structurally substandard. Our current law requires that more than 50% be structurally substandard, and there was a technical change that was in Senator Howe's bill. Section 4 is from Senator Limmer's bill, and what this does is create a soil deficiency district. It outlines the district that requires unusual terrain or soil deficiencies over 80% of the acreage, requiring substantial filling, grading, or other physical preparation, and that the estimated cost of the preparation of that district, excluding certain road and local improvements, exceed the fair market value before completion of the preparation.
Senator Rest.
So, Madam Chair, this Section 5 goes along with your desire to have a more general application of this kind of project rather than naming a city in a special district. I think you were interested in that.
That's correct.
This section represents that work.
Senator Rest, yes, this would have statewide application.
Yeah. Okay.
Instead of the folks coming one at a time, city by city, to take advantage of this, it was intended to be an overall policy that would then encourage that type of redevelopment in these communities.
Madam Chair and Senator, Section 5 is also related to Senator Ortman's request that we create a bill with a more general application. This creates a mining reclamation project area, and this is also a combination of Senator Limmer and Senator Gerlach's bill. And what this does is authorize an authority to designate a mining reclamation project area within a district.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
When he finishes, another question on that section.
And there are certain requirements that a particular acreage must meet in order to be considered the mining reclamation project area. Section paragraph C authorizes that special rules apply that within this mining reclamation project area, certain districts can be created, including a redevelopment district, renewal and renovation district, soil conditions, or soil deficiency district that we created back in Section 4. For districts created within this project reclamation area, we extended the 5-year rule to 10 years and required that not more than 80% of the increment may be expended on activities outside the district but within the property area. This is directly related to Senator Limmer's bill. And applicable uses of the increment from the soil deficiency district to the acquired parcels, pay for costs, correcting the unusual terrain or soil deficiencies, and the additional cost of installing public improvements. Section 6 codifies the duration limit of a soil deficiency district at 20 years.
Okay, Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I don't remember what city Senator Gerlach's bill applied to, but
Apple Valley, Senator Rest.
The officials from Apple Valley and Maple Grove, do they concur that their projects now can go forward under these general provisions?
Have they had a chance to review that? Senator Rest, I have not spoken with them specifically, but that's my understanding, is that they were working together and recommending this language as broad enough to include both of their projects and others statewide similarly situated.
Madam Chair, when we get to the testimony, I hope someone will come forward and say, yes, this works for both projects. I think we just need to hear that kind of affirmation from them so that we haven't done something that unintentionally would throw a wrench in their projects.
Agreed, Senator Rest. And Ms. Haney is here, and she worked on the Maple Grove project, and I'm not sure whether the attorneys for the Apple Valley project are here, but I know they worked together on that, so she may be able to confirm
later on
that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator, Section 7 relates to Senator Cruz's bill, and what this does is modify the law that allows districts to increase by up to 10% their expenditures outside the district to develop housing. And what this does is remove the requirement that a parcel be vacant for 6 or more months, adds rehabilitation to the list of authorized uses, and also requires that the authority or the developer enter into a purchase agreement to acquire the parcel no earlier than 30 days after the expiration of the redemption period. Section 8 is Senator Wieger's bill, and this essentially extends the deadline for the City of Oakdale to establish a tax increment financing district by 6 years. And what this does is exempt the district from certain blight test rules, which require that 70% of the parcels in the area be occupied by buildings and more than 50% be substandard. Section 9 is Senator Gerlach's Apple Valley TIF bill, and what this is essentially an extension of the Jobs bill from 2010, and that was since extended by the special law of 2011. And this allows increment from this district to provide improvements, loans, interest rate subsidies, or assistance if certain conditions are met. Section 10 is Senator Ortman's Bloomington TIF bill, and this authorizes the City of Bloomington and the Bloomington Port Authority to extend the duration of a particular district through December 31st, 2038. It's essentially a 20-year extension. Section 11 is from Senator Senjum's bill, and what that is the Bloomington TIF provision, and that also authorizes the extension of a TIF district through December 38. This is a 7-year extension. Section 12 is Dakota County, a redevelopment TIF, and it is Senator Metzen's bill. And this authorizes the Dakota County Community Development Agency to create a redevelopment district consisting of parcels from an existing district that is set to decertify in 2012. Alternatively, this could be viewed as simply an extension of the existing district. This also authorized expenditure of increment clarifies that expenditures are deemed to meet the pooling requirements, the five-year rule, and the decertification requirements. Section 13 is from Senator Peterson's bill that we heard here yesterday, and that allows the expenditure of funds from a St. Cloud TIF to be expended within the Central Area Urban Renewal Project area of St. Cloud. This would be acceptable until December 31st, 2015. At that point, any remaining funds left over in the balance would be required to be distributed as excess increment. Madam Chair and Senators, Article 5 is the Homestead Market Value Cleanup, and this was Senate File 1831, carried by Senator Ortman. And what this does is, all throughout the statutes, it converts the computation of levies, tax spending, debt, and other limits that are based on market value or taxable market value, and it changes those to estimated market value. This is a response to the Homestead Market Value Exclusion. What this article does is define a market value for purposes of these statutes as the assessor's determination of market value. And then for purposes of debt limits and spending, the market value definition would be prior to specific exclusions that are outlined in the statute. Most of this article deals with certain special taxing districts, including watershed districts, library levies, transit levies, city and county bond debt limits, and it changes the reference from taxable or market value to estimated market value.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6 is a miscellaneous section that contains the two transfers that were discussed when we walked through the spreadsheet. And what Section 1 does is allow the Commissioner of Management and Budget, or require, rather, the Commissioner of Management and Budget to reduce appropriations to executive agencies based on any savings provided through reforms, efficiencies, and cost-saving measures through the implementation of the Data Analytics Master Contract Program. Those reductions to the agencies, the Commissioner of Management and Budget is required to subtract those reductions from the $99.9 million so that any transfer from the budget reserve is reduced by those appropriations. So in the case that there are savings, there won't be $99.9 million transferred from the general fund, but rather a little bit less, or however much less the efficiencies produce. Section 2 is the special recovery fund in the revenue department, and this allows the transfer of $4.3 million to the general fund.
McQuay, thank you. Questions or comments? Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a one comment on, well, and then a question. On Section 8 of the Article 2, which was the idea coming from Senator Koch on how we could accomplish phase out of, or phase in, or whatever you want to call it, of the upfront exemption for capital equipment, I think that's a very good compromise, and I'm glad you were able to come up with that. And then on the question I have is on the increase on the special property tax refund. Is there a way of modeling where those dollars would be felt? I mean, in doing that, is that, I'd be interested in knowing if that increase in both the I don't know what article, what page it is, but where is that? Tell me where that is so I can look at the numbers.
The property tax refund?
It would be Section 8, Madam Chair.
Section 8.
Section 8 of Article 3.
Of Article 3.
We may want to have Mr. Paulson address that question, but yeah, I think there are ways
I'm interested to know whether that is who benefits there. Are we finding those kinds of increases that we would want to include in the special in the targeted property tax refund occurring more in the urban areas in the cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, Rochester kind of thing, or is it happening in the suburbs, or is it let's say, in more rural areas. So is there a way of knowing where we would, where have those increases, not being very articulate here, but where are those increases occurring where people would then see a kind of a leveling of their burden to be able to enjoy the special property tax refund? Can we find that out, or is that just a guess?
Well, Senator Rest, it's not a new program, so we could probably look at where that those funds have gone and refunds have gone in the last, you know, several years. Mr. Paulson may have an answer on that. Mr. Paulson?
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, the department actually does the analysis of the targeting refund, and we can request a geographic analysis from them and see if they're able to provide that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Paulson, so you have requested that?
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, no, not at this point, but we can certainly request it.
Madam Chair, I think that would be very interesting information for the committee in going forward with making changes to that and seeing whether it needs to be massaged a little bit in terms of where we think that those increases have actually occurred to where we want to give that.
Agreed, but I think it's always important to, when you talk about the targeted, to also talk about the other property tax refund, one that is means tested. That's the one that we added $30 million to last year to make sure that folks who had property taxes high relative to their incomes had some relief of that.
I understand that.
And so we have that, and we should always compare them side by side. Then this one is that for that spike in property taxes. And so perhaps Mr. Paulson can provide the analysis of both to the members, if we can get that from the Department of Revenue, and then we can have a conversation about either one or the other or both all together, because I think they really complement each other.
Madam Chair, and the reason why I find that interesting is that people's, I think in at least some areas, the home values have gone flat, even though people's taxes have gone up, and we certainly did address that in the general property tax refund. But then I'm curious, are there places, pockets in Minnesota where people's valuation has gone up that much? And what's happening with the housing market there? I have no objection to the provision. I just think the information would be very informative and instructive to us.
Agreed. And hopefully Mr. Paulson can arrange for that information for the committee.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments about this provision or any of the provisions in the bill? Senator Rest. Or excuse me, I'm looking right at you. Senator
Madam
Marty,
Chair.
Forgive me.
Madam Chair, just curious why you chose to do this portion of the property tax refund instead of the circuit breaker portion, because there were a lot of people. I know you say 30 million in there, but a lot of the impact on those folks was a lot greater than 30 million last year. And I'm hearing a lot of people whose tax increases may be 9-10%, not over 100, not over 12%. But I'm just curious why you chose to go this route. Are you thinking, I mean, it's not much money in this one, so I'm assuming it's not that many people. Why did you choose this instead of the circuit breaker portion?
Well, Senator Marty, we did do the property tax refund program last year, and $30 million is not the totality. That's how much additional money we added to the formula for those refunds. And we targeted middle-income Minnesotans with that. We did not add money at the top income levels or at the very bottom where there was a very large refund. So we focused that money by adding it into the middle income ranges in that. This year, there were questions, I think. We had a very long conversation over months about property taxes at the local level from August all the way to December of last year, and people were concerned that they were going to have high increases in their property taxes. Truly, that did not materialize because of the exclusion of value. However, we wanted to make sure that if it were happening, we were addressing the problem with this targeted property tax refund. And you can see the small amount is because we think that those increases were not numeral. There were not a lot of them. And it won't cost a lot to increase this refund program from 60% to 75%.
Madam Chair, the reason I'm asking is I think I was hearing from a lot of people who were not at the higher end, who were in the middle and so on, who would, people who do get the circuit breaker property tax refund, who are complaining about their property tax increases despite that small bump there, because they were getting large property tax increases. So I'm just curious, because I would guess if you did some bump in that, it would be far more expensive because there are an awful lot of people who've been paying more.
Well, Senator Marty, I was glad we were successful last year to add that $30 million. I'd like to add more, but I think this one right now will address some of the concerns about increases as opposed to just the continuing burden of property taxes relative to income.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As it relates to Section 8 here, when a property has a change in classification, this wouldn't go into effect on a change of classification. It'd have to stay in the same classification, correct?
Senator Howe, I'm not sure which Section 8 you're referring to. Can you just...
Well, it's only for residential homes. So if something changed on a classification, like a residential home became a commercial property, this would not apply.
Senator Howe, right. This is for residences, for residential property taxes. Other questions or comments about the bill? Let me just tell you a little bit about the schedule going forward. We have an amazingly good staff, and they are here to help you. They'll answer questions. They'll help you draft amendments. I know that there are folks here at the table that have them. I've already asked for a couple of amendments to be drafted because I knew they were coming. And the staff is prepared to help you. I'm prepared to help you all day if you'd like. We'll have hearings, public testimony, and amendments tomorrow morning from 8:30 to 11. We can also accommodate for the remainder of the time today with public testimony if folks would like to testify. We hope to finish by 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, but to the extent that we can't accommodate all of the testifiers or hear all of the amendments and consider them, then we will reconvene tomorrow evening at 6 p.m.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rust.
Madam Chair, if we finish the testimony at 9:45 tomorrow, you will start taking votes, and if we can finish the bill by 11 o'clock, you would do that as well? You would not, you wouldn't just recess in order for us to come back?
Senator Rust, it's my hope we can be efficient tomorrow and be respectful of everyone's time and be done by 11, but I don't know how many amendments might get offered, and I don't know how many folks might like to testify. So it's hard for me to predict.
But we would move along.
My goal is to finish by 11 a.m. tomorrow, but we will recess and reconsider, convene at 6 if necessary. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have to briefly comment on some of the things that you said in your opening. I mean, with regard to this statistic that keeps coming around from some out-of-state group that Minnesota is a terrible place to do business, I just think that their information is based on false facts. They penalize states that have two revenue sources, both sales and income. I mean, that's just not an accurate measure of what a state's business climate is like. And so, you know, we kind of got to rethink how many times we keep bringing that up when I don't think it's based on accurate information. You know, I mean, you look at Minnesota, and we've got lots of Fortune 500 companies. You've heard the list of things many times, so I'm not going to go down it. But I would hope that as legislators we would recognize that, you know, Minnesota really is a pretty good place to do business. And then, I'd like to comment a little bit about the inflator on the statewide CI. And I know you keep saying that that's a terrible thing for these businesses to have their taxes inflated by the price index or whatever inflator adjustment it's based on. But, you know, if their property taxes had been based on the valuation increases, they would have been a way higher property tax increases. They've actually, when you look over the last number of years at the CI, some of these classes have actually had property tax decreases, while homeowners' property taxes have gone up significantly more, probably in some cases doubling over the last decade. So I think we should take a little look at what that increase would have been if it had been based on the value increases that they've had and not just this inflator that's some implicit price deflator. I don't remember the class right now. And then the other thing, you know, there's some good stuff in here and some bad stuff in here, but you're paying for it by transferring money out of the reserves. I mean, I'm astounded.
Well, Senator Skoy, two things. I don't think that it says a lot about the, it doesn't make a good case for the inflator that it could have been worse. If we'd have done it differently, it's bad. And when we passed it in 2001, it was with a whole different purpose in mind than what's occurred. And secondly, we've had a change in our economy, a huge change in our economy. And now businesses have come forward. We've had very compelling testimony in this committee last year and this year that our state general levy is having an impact on folks coming to Minnesota and continuing to maintain their properties or even expand their properties here in Minnesota. I think that's undeniable. Secondly, the with respect to the reserves, I think my intention and those of us that I hope will be supporting this bill is that there are efficiencies. The data analytics that even the governor has been talking about are saving monies that unfortunately have not been documented in fiscal notes but have been confirmed. And I think that it's the responsibility of the administration, the governor, the state agencies to make reductions where they can and offset any reduction to the reserves. I think it's clearly within their authority to do it. And what we're asking for is less than, or just a little over 0.25% reduction in our state government budget. And I think in order to develop further economic activity, to reinvest in our job creators, to put that money back into stimulating the economy is a very high priority. And I think that the governor and the commissioners are up to the task of finding these reductions, finding some efficiencies and savings, and it will be up to them as to how much of this actually gets charged against the reserve versus how much they identify and save out of what I think is a very large state government budget.
Well, Madam Chair, if we're going to ask the governor to have savings in his administration, I think you ought to spell them out and write them down on a piece of paper and put them in the bill. And then you'll know where those cuts are going to come from. But to just transfer money out of the reserves and then say, well, we're going to dynamic score this or something and come up with savings that the governor's going to find somewhere, it's, well, nothing like I've ever seen, I guess.
Well, it's been an unusual year, Senator Skoy. I guess I'll say that. Other questions or comments about the bill? Are there folks here that would like to testify today because they can't be back tomorrow? Senator Dibble, did you have a question?
Oh, Madam Chair, I can wait until folks testify who need to testify.
We will accommodate anyone that would like to testify this morning. Otherwise, Senator Dibble, did you want to make comments before we
adjourn? I just had a quick question about one of the provisions. I apologize if I missed it, and I think I might have missed it. On the angel investor tax credit, the page 3, in which we eliminate the
Can you tell me again, Senator
Dibble,
which
it's
section?
Page 3.
3.4.
You're referring to the bill?
Yes.
Page 3. Oh, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is Ms. Pollack's section, but this is how we're measuring the capital upfront exemption. Is that right, Senator, Ms. Pollack? Looking at page 3 of the bill?
I think so. Madam Chair, I'm not sure, and Senator Dibble, I'm not sure if this is the offset for the capital equipment exemption, but...
Madam Chair, it's those businesses, I think, that those businesses that are qualifying for the...
Okay.
Angel investment.
Yeah. Senator Dibble, I've just learned that it's the angel investment tax credit. You got there first, and Senator Michelle will be here tomorrow, but this was a bill that was heard in the Jobs Committee and passed over into the Tax Committee. So...
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I know that this language on page 3 that you're referring to, I think it went along with the elimination of the intern language. So under the previous version of the bill, interns were not interns were included in the provisions in the credit, and now they're stricken, so the corresponding wage language would also be stricken.
Well, Madam Chair, it covers more than
Senator
interns.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, it covers more than interns. All employees must be paid a minimum of 175% of federal poverty guidelines, and now that requirement is eliminated for businesses that qualify for the angel investor tax credit, and I'm wondering why we're doing that. I can wait and ask Senator Michelle when he's here.
I would appreciate that, Senator Dibble. I think he's the best resource on that. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, this doesn't relate to that, but I think the bill is a great start, and a lot of good ideas in here, TIF among them, and I think we can find $100 million out of $17 billion somewhere in the couch cushions, as they say. So I'm confident we can do that, and that $100 million, I think, will go a long way to help out business and property owners, et cetera. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Dibble.
Yes, Madam Chair, I've got little $2 million and $5 million ideas. Maybe I'll find couch cushions of my own.
Everything's relative, Senator Dibble. Anyone else? Seeing nothing further for this morning, we will adjourn until tomorrow morning at 8:30.